All right, this is the time set for argument of docket number 91228. Argument is set at 34 minutes, 17 per side. Do you all, on behalf of the appellant, wish to retain any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 5 minutes.
5 minutes, very good. You can approach the podium and get started when you're ready.
Thank you.
May it please the court. The question before you is whether a district court may rewrite the party's operating agreement by inserting the business judgment rule where neither the agreement nor NRS Chapter 86 includes it. The answer, under bedrock Nevada law and sound legislative policy, is no. Four independent principles compel this conclusion. First, Nevada law demands that LLC operating agreements be interpreted to give, quote, maximum effect to the principle of freedom of contract, end quote. While CPI's operating agreement created fiduciary duties, it nowhere references, let alone incorporates, the business judgment rule. This court has held that courts may not interpolate in a contract what the contract does not contain, and may not revise a contract under the guise of construing it. That is precisely what the district court did. Second, the legislature's silence is intentional and must be respected. The legislature codified the business judgment rule for corporations in NRS Chapter 78, 8 years after LLCs existed under Nevada law. It chose not to enact any equivalent provision for LLCs. Under this court's own precedent, omissions from statutory provisions are presumed intentional. The district court's decision to insert what the legislature deliberately withheld violates the separation of powers enshrined in Nevada's constitution. Third, if LLC members want the protection of the business judgment rule, they merely have to draft it into their operating agreement, either originally or by amendment, just as they must affirmatively draft fiduciary duties in the first place. That's the genius of LLCs, contractual flexibility. The district court's ruling destroys that flexibility by injecting the rule into every operating agreement that includes fiduciary duties, regardless of the contracting party's intent or desire. Fourth, inserting the business judgment rule is fundamentally unfair. Silva was never on notice under Chapter 86 or the operating agreement that the business judgment rule would apply unless he affirmatively opted out. Nothing in the statute signaled that this doctrine would be imported by default, and nothing in the agreement so much as hinted at it. Silva reasonably relied on the plain language of the contract and the governing statute without any expectation that additional standards would be grafted onto the operating agreement after the fact. Permitting the retroactive insertion of the business judgment rule under these circumstances offends basic principles of notice and fairness, and it undermines confidence in every contractual relationship under Chapter 86.
Counsel, how can we know then if the fiduciary duties are grafted into the operating agreement without the business judgment rule, how do we know it's been breached?
The same way that we know that any other provision of a contract has been breached. We look at the terms and see if they have been complied with or violated. The same way that we would, so taking fiduciary duties, for example, those exist for partners in partnership agreements, those exist for attorneys, those exist for trustees, those exist for agents as to principals, and yet none of them have the benefit of the business judgment rule, and yet courts across the state and the nation decide whether or not those duties have been breached every day.
So, counsel, over this end, sorry.
Sorry, Your Honor.
It's okay. At the time that the provision in the corporations chapter was adopted, codifying the business judgment rule, that wasn't until 1999. We agree with them that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And that was after LLCs had already been adopted as a business form in Nevada, right?
Correct. 8 years after.
8 years after. So in 1991, at the time the LLC chapter first was adopted, allowing that kind of corporate form, corporations obviously had been allowed in Nevada going back quite a long time.
Yes.
And yet the business judgment rule had already been applied under common law in the corporate context. So at the time we decided, hey, let's have LLCs too, the business judgment rule was already part of the common law without being in the statutes. So at the time LLCs were adopted, would business judgment rule apply then to LLCs?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And I appreciate that Your Honor brought up the timing because it matters. There's roughly two centuries of common law dealing with the business judgment rule in the corporate context. But because LLCs are so new on the scene, so to speak, the common law simply does not apply to them, is the short answer to the court's question.
And why? Like, why does the common law not...
Sure, apply? I appreciate...
Like, if someone brings a breach of contract claim, there's lots of common law in Nevada about how to show a breach of contract. Certainly that common law applies.
Yes, Your Honor, so the reason is that LLCs are deliberately, fundamentally different from corporations. Corporations have statutorily defined fiduciary and other duties. They also have various presumptions, etc. They're a very rigid, formal structure. If you're going to have a corporation, this is what it must look like, and there's very little flexibility. An LLC was created, again, recently, because first Wyoming and then other states said, well, we have corporations, we have partnerships, but we need something that is much more flexible, that is something that can be customized between those two things. And so LLCs were created, and specifically, Nevada's LLC statute is much more flexible than any other statute in the nation when it comes to LLCs, where the court and all those interpreting operating agreements are told to maximize the principle of freedom of contract. There are, unlike many, most other states, there are no default fiduciary or other duties. Literally under the LLC statute, every single duty and any liability can be disclaimed by the operating agreement except one. And this emphasizes how much LLCs are a creature of contract. It's the implied covenantal duty of good faith and fair dealing. Why can't we disclaim that? Well, because that's implied in every contract in Nevada. But that's why it doesn't apply to LLCs. They are fundamentally and intentionally different from corporations.
So the common law principle applying breach of covenant of good faith and fair dealing does apply.
I'm sorry, would Your Honor ask that one more time?
I'm sorry. You were just talking about the breach of covenant of good faith and fair dealing, and why did that have to be adopted? Well, because there's already one of those in every contract in Nevada. That's pursuant to common law, correct?
So actually that's close but not quite, Your Honor. The reason that that's true is because the statute repeatedly says you can disclaim any liability, any duty, except for this one. The legislature specifically chose, not relying on common law, but as we draft this statute, we as the legislature are saying anything can be disclaimed, anything can be limited, but this one. So it's not based on common law. It is in the black letter statute itself.
And then by putting in the operating agreement, these specific duties, which you pointed out, it wouldn't necessarily have all those duties under the LLC chapter, but it can incorporate those if it wants in its operating agreement, and it did so here. So why doesn't it make sense that having adopted those duties, it also gets the gloss that comes with it?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Let's talk about that for just a moment. If I can find where my notes are on that question. Okay, so let's talk about the duties. So, yes, there are duties labeled duty of loyalty, duty of care in the operating agreement. Those are far from those under Nevada law. Under Nevada law, and this is in Schoen v. SAC Holding Corp. 137 P3rd 1171 at 1178, the duty of care consists of the obligation to act on an informed basis, okay? Is there a duty of care under Chapter 86? There is not. Okay, well, how about under the operating agreement? Well, there is one labeled that there, and that's the first volume of the appendix at pages 93 through 95. I think this one's specifically on 93. Quote, and this is under the duty of care heading. Each member shall act in a manner he believes in good faith to be in the best interest of the company and with the care an ordinarily prudent person in like position would exercise under similar circumstances. Subject to the preceding sentence, no member shall be liable, responsible, or accountable in damages or otherwise to the company or the other members for any acts performed or omitted by him in good faith within the scope of the agreement. That's the contractual duty of care. Again, Nevada's is an obligation to act on an informed basis. They're not even remotely similar. And so why wouldn't the corporate business judgment rule apply to the LLC in this case because there is a duty of care? Well, because this court looks beyond mere labels and looks at the substance. And the substance of the duty of care under the operating agreement is wholly unlike the duty of care under Nevada corporate statutes and this court's interpreting case law.
So why would we, in 2017 in Gardner, when we said, hey, if you put the alter ego doctrine into the corporate statute, you're not really creating a negative inference that not putting it in the LLC statute means that it can't apply. Why would that same theory, and why would we not follow our own logic from that case in applying the business judgment rule here, even though it's not in the LLC statutes?
Yes, Your Honor, and there are four reasons for that. First and foremost, the alter ego doctrine is an external facing creditor protection provision. If an individual is using the corporate form to try to shield themselves from liability for fraud or other misconduct, we want creditors and others to be able to seek redress. The business judgment rule is instead a decision about how much deference to give internal decision makers. Now, the legislature decided in Chapter 86 that question should be left to the contracting parties. But let me stay with Gardner for a moment. So that's difference number one. The whole purpose of the alter ego doctrine is entirely different from that of the business judgment rule. Two, legislative history. As this court noted, legislative history specifically opined that the alter ego doctrine would apply in the LLC context. There is no similar legislative history here. That's difference number two. Number three, the question really then becomes one of whether or not Gardner weakens or frankly writes out this court's canons of statutory construction, specifically these. The court presumes that, quote, the legislature, when enacting statutes, is aware of other similar statutes. That's Cable v. State, 122 Nevada, 120 at 125. Additionally, quote, Nevada law provides that omissions of subject matters from statutory provisions are presumed to have been intentional. That's Department of Taxation v. Damer Chrysler, 121 Nevada, 541 at 548. And quote, we must assume that the legislature, when it enacted the statute, was aware of the various policy considerations and purposely drafted the statute to read as it does. End quote. That's Randono v. CUNA Mutual Insurance Group, 106 Nevada, 371 at 375. So unless Gardner says, hey, actually, we didn't mean that sub silentio, which I don't think that it did, then Gardner stands for the unassuming proposition that everybody agrees alter ego should be available for both corporations and LLCs. The fourth reason Gardner doesn't apply, though, is this, and this is important. You can't contract around alter ego. There's nothing you can put in the contract that avoids that liability. It's an entirely separate issue. However, if we were to then say, oh, we can rewrite the contract here, we're going to intrude on this court's construing canons for contracts along the following lines. Quote, a court may not revise a contract under the guise of construing it, nor interpolate in a contract what the contract does not contain. That's Traffic Control Services v. United Rentals Northwest, 120 Nevada, 168 at 175 through 76. Or further, quote, contracts will be construed from their written language and enforced as written. That's the Power Company v. Henry, 130 Nevada, 182 at 189. And further, courts are, quote, not at liberty either to disregard words used by the parties or to insert words which the parties have not made use of, end quote. That's Edelstein v. Bank of New York Mellon, 128 Nevada, 505 at 518. Inserting this clause would do significant damage, not just to the statutory interpreting canons that this court has laid down, but also to the principle of freedom of contract. Your Honor, I see that I'm at time.
Take a shot, counsel, but correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Vokun?
Voken.
Voken. Thank you. I figured I was going to be wrong.
No worries.
Please begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jacqueline Vogan on behalf of the Real Parties in Interest. A writ of mandamus is not necessary here because the district court's determination that the business judgment rule applies to LLCs who have adopted fiduciary duties is consistent with fundamental principles of business law, the legislative history of Nevada's business statutes, and CPI's operating agreement. The business judgment rule is a judicially created doctrine under the common law designed to limit court interference in business decision making. Silva asked the court to ignore longstanding principles of law, recognizing that courts who lack particular expertise and are burdened by hindsight should not substitute their own notions of what is sound business judgment. In arguing that the business judgment rule should not extend to LLC fiduciaries, Silva essentially asked the court to rechristen the common law business judgment rule as the corporate judgment rule. But the principles underlying the business judgment rule apply to decisions made by fiduciaries in both the LLC and corporate contexts. Nevada created the LLC as a business entity form intended to have the tax benefits of a partnership, but the liability protections of a corporation. Given this overlap, courts have consistently extended corporate doctrines to LLCs under the common law. In Gardner, the court held that the codification of the alter ego doctrine in the corporate statute did not, by negative inference, preclude its application to LLCs under the common law. The same analysis supports applying the business judgment rule to LLCs here. As with alter ego and Gardner, the business judgment rule is supported by law in other jurisdictions, Nevada's legislative history, and fundamental principles of law that have been relied on by courts for over 150 years. The district court merely applied the common law. Under NRS 1.030, the common law applies unless there is a contradictory or abrogating statute. Neither of those apply here. Because fiduciary duty requires some action that's more than general negligence or mere negligence, you need a standard that can handle that, the counterbalancing force. It makes the most sense to apply the standard that's historically applied and associated with the breach of fiduciary duty, where a contract doesn't specify some other duty, than it does to come up with some new one, or make courts, again, go into the shoes of the fiduciaries and try to make business decisions.
Ms. Vogan, this side. Sorry. How do you respond to opposing counsel's argument that, you know, this is different because LLCs don't have to adopt any duties, unlike a corporation, which has to have these fiduciary duties, weighs out what those duties are, and then the business judgment rule, which has an impact on how it's analyzed, where the LLC statute is specifying, you know, the only duty is the covenant of good faith and fair dealing and such other duties as are expressly prescribed. So don't they get to decide what applies and what doesn't specifically under this statute?
Your Honor, I agree that they do get to decide what applies in terms of duties, and they also would get to apply a standard if they wanted to change it. But where it's silent, as it is in CPI's operating agreement, it makes most sense to rely on what the courts have recognized.
I'm sorry to interrupt. That was really loud. Could they put in the operating agreement, we adopt these fiduciary duties without application of the business judgment rule, and then it wouldn't apply?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that would work perfectly. That is the freedom of contract aspect. This is more akin to if an operating agreement had a provision saying that the prevailing party would win attorney's fees, they wouldn't need to put in a standard saying that the reasonableness of those fees would be assessed under Brunzell. That would just automatically apply under the law. The same thing applies here with the fiduciary duties. It goes hand in hand with the business judgment rule unless disclaimed.
So you're imposing an affirmative disclaimer of the business judgment rule as an obligation in the operating agreement?
Where the fiduciary duties are incorporated, yes, establishing a different standard because the common law standard applied to those duties.
But the operating agreement in this case on page 94 of the record does incorporate duty of care and fiduciary duties, but as your colleague on the other side notes, the fiduciary duty, if you had a Venn diagram, would be a much smaller subset than the full circle of duties that the common law business judgment rule would impose. So are you just basically arguing that you have to say in your contract, not only here are the fiduciary duties we're specifying that are owed, but furthermore, we don't want to imply any additional fiduciary duties consistent with the common law? Is that your proposal, that how we deal with the contract issue in this case?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I also respectfully disagree with counsel's interpretation of the duty of care under Nevada statutes. Just comparing the two, NRS 78.1381 says exercise powers in good faith on an informed basis and with a view to the best interests of the company.
CBI, yeah, the statutory business judgment rule articulated in Nevada is stricter than the common law business judgment rule historically.
I think
and
that's...
And you're trying to import the corporate statutory business judgment rule obligations into this arena, which is fundamentally different because LLCs are animated by a freedom of contract precept and letting you do business in that fashion. I mean, even, I guess I'm just puzzled by your contract interpretation on the operating agreement.
I also respectfully disagree on the incorporating the full, so the business judgment rule in Nevada has two components, which is the presumption, which is in 1383, and then there's the exculpatory provision, which is 1387. And I believe that's the part that's been interpreted to be the more exacting standard. We don't ask for that here, and the district court did not apply that. The district
okay,
court
so
specifically
you're not asking for
the exculpatory.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Can I ask kind of the inverse of what my colleague, Justice Kadish, asked? If there were no fiduciary duty language in the operating agreement, then would you agree the business judgment rule would not apply?
Precisely, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, so I guess why is it necessarily needed, the business judgment rule, in order to have a claim for breach of fiduciary duty? As counsel has pointed out, business judgment rule is routinely used in the corporate context, and we're familiar with it in that context. But there are certainly other contexts that have fiduciary duties and claims for breach thereof without a business judgment rule. So it's not like no one in the world can interpret a breach of fiduciary duty without the business judgment rule. So why does it necessarily have to be used here?
The main reason, I would say, is that LLCs are intended to have the liability protections of a corporation. With corporate fiduciary duties, the liability protection is typically always understood to come with that presumption, which keeps the courts from second-guessing business judgment. It keeps disgruntled shareholders and disgruntled members who maybe don't care about your decision so much but don't like you from making lawsuits and saying, I don't appreciate that you bought these kinds of pens. That's going to take something outside the realm. The fiduciary duty in the business judgment rule is going to keep that kind of vexatious litigation and from barring down the courts, slowing business down, causing unnecessary costs.
Can we assume that the legislature, so the legislature codified the business judgment rule for corporations, but not for LLCs. So how does that play out? Because it seems like, I mean, would the legislature have to say, we specifically don't incorporate the business judgment rule here? That was their intention? Or could we just take from them not doing it that was their intention?
I think that's an excellent question, particularly because having the legislature legislate a business judgment rule in the LLC context would be asking the legislature to legislate on a contingency basis. So we're asking them to make a just-in-case provision if somebody does incorporate common law regular fiduciary duties, that now you have to incorporate the common law rule or the standard of review, whereas it makes more sense that you put them in, and if you don't like what normally comes in the law with these duties you brought, say something in your contract about it. I think it actually goes to one of counsel's other arguments about other states implying the fiduciary duties by statute. I actually think it's more persuasive that the common law fiduciary duty, or the common law business judgment rule should apply here, where other states have default fiduciary duties, because they also apply the common law. They didn't see the need to legislate that, even though they automatically have the fiduciary duties that Nevada does not.
Do the other states that have found the business judgment rule applying to an LLC, was that in general based on a required fiduciary duty obligation, or was that also this kind of a contingency where they don't even have to have fiduciary duties under LLCs in Nevada, and there's a statute specifically saying you can adopt whatever duties you want?
So most of the states do have some form of fiduciary duty. The ones cited in the papers, I will say almost all of them have the exact same fiduciary duties stated in the CPI operating agreement, including the Model Business Corporation Act, the ALL Principles of Corporate Governance, Minnesota, New York, and Maryland's corporate statutes, North Carolina. They all have the exact same duty. In a lot of those states and Delaware under the common law, they can opt out of fiduciary duties, but they are otherwise in. And so those states all applied the business judgment rule to those fiduciary duties.
Are we the only opt-in to fiduciary duty state? I have no idea.
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but we're the only one cited in the briefs.
Okay, thank you.
So I want to understand, by your reckoning, how would a group of people who are forming an LLC avoid the business judgment rule other than by affirmative disclaimer? Or is it your position that they must affirmatively disclaim the common law business judgment rule in their operating agreement to avoid its application?
If there's fiduciary duties and there's no other standard, I would argue that it does automatically apply, but I don't think it necessarily has to be an affirmative disclaimer. They could also incorporate some other standard of review if they wanted to, and they can pull that from whatever they think and is part of their expectations.
And tell me why they did not do so here.
I think it's similar to the Brunzell argument again. This is something that typically comes
by agreement. I mean, it seems to me a contract is interpreted if you expressly say something. Yeah, that's what's obligated. But especially if ours is the only opt-in state like that, it seems to me that we should take them at their word, and perhaps an argument could be made that what they expressly say is the boundaries and the limit of that obligation.
I think part of the issue with that is that the business judgment rule isn't typically a term in an operating agreement anywhere. It's a judicial standard of review. So having them go out of their way to say this judicial standard of review does apply, where it's something we always expect to apply. We always expect the same standards to apply on motions to dismiss. We always expect the same standards to apply on attorney's fees. It makes sense that persons forming an LLC wouldn't be thinking, oh, I need to make sure that the law that's been applied here for 150 years is still applied here.
So is it just a procedural presumption? I mean, I know that's the word that is being used in discussing what we're referring to as the business judgment rule here. But so is it just like a burden of proof, burden shifting that we're talking about?
Yes. Under the common law, it is specifically that you need particularized allegations at the motion to dismiss stage rebutting it. If you get past that at the trial stage or summary judgment stage, courts have interpreted to mean you need to rebut it with actual evidence.
So the fact that there's a presumption later on means that there's heightened pleading requirements.
Yes. And I will say that the same language in CPI's operate agreement that counsel quoted earlier, the subject to the preceding sentence, no member shall be liable for good faith and within the scope of this agreement, other states have interpreted that sentence along with the duty of care right before that to actually incorporate the business judgment rule itself under their law. So it already comes along under most interpretations of the common law business judgment rule. And because the purpose of the LLC as an entity form is to have the corporate liability shields, it makes sense to have the same heightened pleading requirements to try and get through the liability protections.
What what's your response to your opposing colleague's argument that Gardner really is different fundamentally because alter ego liability protects people beyond those who are the founders of the business entity, and it's protective to a broader range of people who may not have the opportunity to arrange their affairs to avoid it. So the common law makes sense in that setting, and the corporate, the statutory omission of it, certainly there's nothing that suggests that the common law was abrogated by our legislature. But I do see his point that those are fundamentally different contexts. Could you comment on that?
I don't think they're entirely different. I think alter ego is just a way of applying the law to the corporate liability protections, and that is the essence, the same thing that overlaps. So
but
I don't.
Alter ego extends to third parties who are not part of the business itself. So that liability protection is protection against the world by virtue of the business entity, as opposed to members against other investors or members, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think it's fundamentally changes the standard of review that should apply to the fiduciary duties. I also think
I think there's helpful stuff in Gardner to your side of the case, but just on that point, it's different. The liabilities are different.
Yes, the liabilities are different, but it's still true that it is the liability protections of a corporation that are at issue in both cases. And I will also say just real quick while we're on it that the alter ego specifically considered in the legislative history, if you look at that, when they're talking about alter ego applying to LLCs as they're adopting it in the 1999 statute, they're talking about it in the context of course it applies, that's the law. That they don't even think we'd legislate it because it's obvious. And I think the same thing is true of the business judgment rule, fiduciary duties.
Can I ask just one more quick thing? Does it matter that this is a manager-managed LLC versus a member-managed LLC versus a manager-managed LLC?
I think, so the law would treat it in other jurisdictions based on the level of control that whoever it is being claimed breach of fiduciary duty against. There's a couple cases cited where it was a manager managed, but a member was sued, and the court reconsidered its own decision and said, you know what, there's a question of fact as to how much control you had. That was the Oregon case. So we'll see how much control you have, and then we'll determine whether or not the business judgment rule protections apply to you.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Your Honors, this court in Waddell v. H2O Incorporated said, quote, the rules governing the formation and operation of Nevada LLCs are set forth in NRS Chapter 86. Those who wish to enter into an LLC should be vastly familiar with this chapter in order to properly protect their interests. It didn't say go look to common law. It didn't say go look to jurisprudence of other states. By the way, all of those courts that decided the LLC, or rather the business judgment rule applied to LLCs, those were not the highest courts in those jurisdictions. They assumed without deciding, they had almost no authority or analysis in almost every case, et cetera, et cetera. But this court has said, we're to look to Chapter 86. And Chapter 86 says that we are to maximize the principle of freedom of contract. Requiring an opt-out or an affirmative disclaimer, all of that infringes on the maximization of the freedom of contract. Whatever is in the contract, under this court's clear jurisprudence, what's in the contract should control.
But why, to counsel's point, when you're doing, like if you say the prevailing party gets attorney's fees, you don't say, and we are going to go buy Brunzell, and we're going to apply this kind of rule that we apply to every request for attorney's fees for reasonableness. Would they have to disclaim that if they didn't want to go through that process? I mean, it's just implied that that's the process that the court goes through.
So, Your Honor, there's a, when a party says, hey, the prevailing party gets attorney's fees, then we go and we petition the court, and the court says, okay, in order to obtain attorney's fees, this is the process that you go through, but it doesn't change anything in the party's contract. Here, this is a fundamental change in the party's contract. Remember, the business judgment rule is a decision to provide or not provide some degree of deference to the decisions made by the decision makers. It's not hard to imagine that various LLCs might decide, you know what, we want lots of duties and very little deference, or maybe we want very few duties and lots of deference. And the parties get to choose that. In this particular case, the parties made that choice.
As you pointed out, so they don't even have to have fiduciary duties at all in an LLC.
Correct, okay. Exactly.
But, and so here they chose to put one in, right, where they don't even have to have it at all. But under your proposed interpretation, though, by putting it in, they not only adopted it, but actually have a higher, stricter standard for directors and officers, leading to more potential liability than would be the case even in the corporate context. So, like, I don't know, that seems almost like the opposite of what they would want in LLCs.
Well, and this is the beauty of LLCs is they can choose. For example, maybe the business partners don't particularly trust each other. Maybe this is a highly sensitive area. There's a million reasons why individuals, again, this is a four-member LLC, they can evaluate what is it we're doing, who are we doing it with, what sort of duties do we want, and do we want any presumptions or deference regarding those decisions. And by the way, my colleague on the other side has said that they were silent as to those protections, etc. Absolutely not. If we look at section 6.2, 6.4, 6.5, this is the first volume of the appendix, pages 93, 94, 95, we read, the care an ordinarily prudent person in like position would exercise. May I briefly finish, Your Honor? We read about a good faith reliance clause. We read about an indemnification provision. It's not that they didn't think about, hey, what sorts of protections do we want to provide? They thought about it, they incorporated what they want, and they did not incorporate the business judgment rule. This court should not rewrite the party's operating agreement under the legislature's policy directives or this court's own jurisprudence.
To a number of the cases that the respondents referred to, Delaware, Virginia, California, Oregon, North Carolina, South Dakota, et cetera.
Yes.
Regardless of what level of that state court system they came from, as far as I know, those are still in place rulings that have said business judgment rule can apply to LLCs, including some of those states that, even though it's not codified in LLC statutes. Are you aware of any authority that says the business judgment rule cannot apply to LLCs unless it is codified?
So I am not aware of any authority that says that. However, in looking at these other cases for persuasive value, you will see there is virtually no analysis. There is no authority. Largely, these issues were not litigated, and the court simply assumed without analysis. They're not very helpful.
Chief? Sorry, I promise it's quick. Do you agree, are we the only opt-in state as to fiduciary duties?
As far as I'm aware, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks, Chief.
Okay, anything else? Nope. All right, this matter will stand submitted. Thank you all very much for the briefing and the argument today. Interesting issues, and well done. So we will be in recess until the next call report.
All rise.